Audrey Isaac is a Mi'kmaq from the Listigouche Reserve in eastern Quebec. She's the mother of twin girls, now 13 years old. Audrey hasn't seen her daughters for 2.5 years. They live in Florida with their father, David Lavoie, Audrey's ex-husband, who is non-native. The girls are not permitted to come and see their mother, and she can't cross the border to see them. Audrey's case got some attention in the mainstream media in recent weeks because of accusations of bias and discrimination by 5 First Nations advocacy groups against Quebec Superior Court Judge Frank G. Barraquette, who in 1999 awarded custody of Audrey's daughters to their father. The story starts in California, where the family was living when the marriage started to fall apart. Audrey decided to bring the girls back to the Listigouche Reserve, and her husband filed charges of kidnapping against her. Audrey Isaac's case is a complicated one, but one thing we know is that the Canadian Judicial Council in Ottawa is at this time evaluating 10 complaints against Judge Frank Barraquette for, among other things, insensitivity, ignorance, and bias concerning First Nations and their cultures in his treatment of Audrey Isaac in court and in his written judgment of the case. The 5 groups who joined forces to support Audrey Isaac in lodging a formal complaint against Judge Barraquette at the Canadian Judicial Council are the Assembly of First Nations, the Quebec Native Women's Association, the Listigouche Mi'kmaq First Nation Government, the Native Women's Association of Canada, and the Assembly of First Nations of Quebec and Labrador. They argue that Judge Barraquette's biased view of life on Indian reserves unfairly affected the rights of the children, as well as the mother in the Audrey Isaac case. We'll let Audrey Isaac tell her story.
I've been going through this for 7 years. I wanted a divorce from my husband, and I came home with my children and got charged for kidnapping. Took me a while to get a lawyer. Nobody wanted to take my case, saying it was too complex. And eventually, I did get some lawyers. But before that, I went to court, family court, and asked for a postponement. And the judge said I didn't need a postponement, that the session would go on that day, which it did. I had to represent myself, and he ordered that the children be returned to their father. So I felt I didn't have a fair trial, especially only getting a 5-day notice and not being able to get a lawyer. I asked for also representation for the kids, and that was denied. So from that point, I went into hiding on the reserve. I became a fugitive. Eventually, the First Nations government decided to protect me, and there was a lot of pressure from the ministers of justice and outside authorities. Eventually, we negotiated to make an interim agreement between my ex-husband, his lawyers, and my lawyers, myself, and they dropped the warrants for my arrest, and we went to court, and that's when we went in front of Frank Barraquette in 1999, and the court went on for 7 days, and I had psychologists that did evaluations on me and my daughters. It was ordered by the court, and also Dave, my ex-husband, was supposed to have a psychological evaluation, but he didn't. So instead of the judge getting mad at my ex-husband, he threw out the evaluation, saying that they weren't complete. Of course, the evaluations were in my favor and my daughter's, to have them stay with me. So that was the beginning of the injustice with Frank G. Barraquette. In court, he said a lot of things that surprised me, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. You know, I thought, what is this guy doing? Where is he coming from? I think it was up until the time when we received the judgment, which was about 6 months later, and when we read everything and it painted a very negative picture of me, we realized that he was biased. He had made comments that I brainwashed my children into a childlike myth of powwows and rituals away from the real world, which would indicate that he doesn't even respect Native culture. Of course, practicing our culture doesn't mean I'm brainwashing my children. Mm. I mean, they loved it. They were shawl dancers. They worked on crafts. We went to community events, powwows. It's just a part of our culture in Listigouche. And he made comments. He asked me at one point, he said, what do you want for your children? And I said, well, I want them to be happy. And he said, well, put them on heroin and they'll be happy all the time. And this comment shocked me. I didn't know what he meant by that. And after thinking and reflecting later on, I realized that, again, is this a stereotype comment that all natives are drug abusers and it's the only way you can make them happy? Another comment he made was that my twins were blonde-haired and freckled-faced. And he, making that comment, he didn't feel that they looked native, so therefore they weren't native. And he made numerous comments. He said that he normally doesn't condone violence, but he can understand my ex-husband's frustration. My ex-husband had lied and said that I wouldn't allow him to see the kids. When we were in criminal court for this, for him abusing me, I wanted to bring that up, but I wasn't allowed to speak. When I stood up, I was scolded by the judge and told to sit down, and if we had a problem with it, me and my mom, and a person from the Haven House, which is a woman's shelter, we could all leave right now. So this carried through into Judge Barakat's chambers, believing that I wouldn't allow him to see the kids. And so I said, well, Your Honor, would you assault and terrorize a 68-year-old woman, though? And he shrugged his shoulders, and I said, a 68-year-old woman?
Who is this now?
Judge Barakat.
No, the 68-year-old woman was your mother.
It's my mother.
Yeah.
Right. She passed away over 3 years ago.
And your husband assaulted her?
Yes, he did. Mm. What happened was he came into my house, and he wanted to take the kids, and he had pepper spray and plastic handcuffs, and he changed his hair color. He had a hat on, and he rented a Bronco that had tinted windows. And people had noticed this truck like a whole week. He was stalking. He was staying in a hotel room across the river. And when they seized his truck, there was photos. There was a tape recording. There was a book on how to kidnap. There was videotape, binoculars.
None of this was ever revealed in any court of law? None of this ever came out?
A lot of this was brought forward, of course, but a lot of it was just thrown out. So when I told him, he said he was here for the kids, and when I told him I wasn't going to tell him where they were, luckily, it was my birthday, luckily they just went out to sleep, but my sisters and my mom and I were watching a video and just relaxing, and he walked in and stood there and threatened to use the pepper spray and handcuffs, and I just kind of looked at him. My mom said, I'm going to call the cops. When she reached for the phone, he knocked the phone back, knocking her back, and he pulled the phone out of the wall, all the cords, and that's when he jumped on me and he started beating me. And, of course, I'm trying to block my face with my hands, and in doing so, he punched my finger several times, my baby finger, and knocked it out of place, way out of place, in a couple of areas, that it required surgery.
Oh.
But I never had it because, like I said, when we went to court and I never got a fair trial, we went into hiding. So I sort of rehabilitated my own finger, and it's just fine today.
How did Judge Barakat evaluate this attack, this assault?
Well, he started to say, normally I don't condone this sort of thing, but, you know, I can understand him. It's just like I told you, I can understand him doing this because he believed Dave was treated unfairly and that I was keeping the kids from him, and he was enraged. So
he was fully within his rights to come in and attack you and your mother.
That's what he felt, because when I said, would you do this to a 68-year-old woman, he said, yes, I would if that 68-year-old woman took my kids. And I said, but Your Honor, she didn't take him. He said, oh, I don't know. She was with you. And it's all in the transcripts. And the thing is, no judge is ever supposed to condone violence.
You went to the Quebec Court of Appeal to reverse this decision.
That's right.
But they supported the judge.
They did. They didn't feel that he was biased in any way. They remarked was that he said a few inappropriate comments. Also, my lawyers got my ex-husband to admit that he signed false affidavits to get the kids from me in California. And the judge didn't, I mean, that's a serious thing when you sign false affidavits, but the judge just sort of said, oh, well, there was a little exaggeration on the affidavits. And so the appeal judges agreed with Judge Barakat. So then what we've done is we sent in complaints to the Canadian Judicial Council on Frank Barakat, which is about a year and 4 months ago. And we sent also 12 complaints on the appeal judges, and recently we got a response from the Canadian Judicial Council saying that they're still viewing Judge Barakat, but they are going to dismiss the complaints on the appeal judges, and they didn't see that there was any reason for them, that they were biased. So, of course, the Native Women's Association has written a letter to them. It's like 25 pages explaining why we feel we are not treated fairly. And I think one of the examples is the Donald Marshall case. And there's another example, I can't think of it right now, and of course using my own, where the Canadian Judicial Council was brought forward evidence and it was just dismissed without explanation.
A number of First Nations advocacy groups have come to your defense, accusing Barakat of insensitivity and ignorance and bias against First Nations and their cultures. How long do you think it's going to take before you get any kind of reply?
I don't know how long it's going to take, but Matthew Kunkum has written several letters to the government asking them to intervene, since they've intervened in other cases where they felt the judge was being unfair, and asked them to intervene because it was obviously the judge was out of line making such comments, and they haven't even responded. They've written other letters, too, to the Canadian Judicial Council asking, you know, are we going to be getting a response soon? And we just recently got that response, like I told you, saying that they're still investigating it. So we feel it takes too long. I mean, my life has been horrible. I haven't seen my kids since. It was August 24th, 1999, two and a half years. I can't cross the border because there's still warrants for my arrest. In the interim agreement, before we went back to court, my ex-husband agreed that part of the agreement was that he would talk to the authorities. They're explaining that, you know, I was willing to negotiate and we were going to reopen the case. But instead, he sent the negative judgment that Judge Barakat did to the authorities, which paints a horrible picture of me and my community. So I can't cross the border right now. We're hoping, you know, that we'll be able to eventually start up, get another lawyer in the United States and continue. But right now, I have to fight this judgment. It makes me look terrible. He also said that I had little or no motivation, that I had no idea, absolutely no idea or ability in knowing what was the best interest for my kids. And he said David was a solid citizen, having no problems with the law. After we brought forward the 6 charges he got for assaulting me, my mother, carrying mace, high-speed chase, false entry, I forget all of them, and he was in jail for 2 weeks. We brought that all forward, and he said he had no problems with the law, and he was a solid citizen. So I you know, you have to wonder, where is this all coming from? Where the psychologists spoke so highly about me after spending time in my home, after doing all that testing, taking my kids out, seeing how I function with them. They were so impressed. You know, I'd gone through a lot of stress throughout that whole time, being a fugitive, trying to get lawyers, trying to get support. My mother passed away. I felt guilt. My mother had to sleep the last 3 years of her life with her bedroom door locked. Her windows, the curtains were always shut tight. Her door was locked, always afraid that he would come back and hurt her or hurt me and the kids. And I told a judge that. And still he felt like I had no motivation and no idea what was the best interest for the kids. I took parenting classes. I went to counseling just to be a stronger person. I brought that all forward. And he was contradicting, too, because at one point he said I was a very intelligent woman and that he could tell I was a very loving and nurturing mother, and that was 90% of being a good mother. Then in the judgment, he said I had no idea or ability. So Very contradicting, and all this was brought forward in the appeal. All this was brought forward to the Canadian Judicial Council, and it's all been, well, the appeal, the complaint against the appeal judges has been dismissed, and they basically said they're still investigating Judge Barakat. Mm-hmm. It just seems like they protect their own.
So how does it feel to be back on the reserve?
Oh, it feels good to be home. I have the support of my family, the support of my community, my friends. But it's hard because everybody knew my twins and everybody knew what I went through. And they asked me constantly, how's the case going? How are the twins? Do you talk to the twins? I mean, it's hard. I feel like my life evolves around this case. And it's very stressful to keep talking about it and reliving it. And I understand I have to gain support. And, you know, it's not only for getting my kids back, but it's for fighting this injustice. Apparently, since I've been going through this, I've been hearing so many nightmare stories of natives going through this all over the country. So if this can make a difference, even for one person, that they would never have to go through what I've experienced, and it would be all worth it. And I tell you, I'm not giving up. I'll never give up. I've been going through this for 7 years. It's affected me emotionally, mentally, and physically. But I am a strong woman. My mom always said I was very determined.
I think that what we all have to do is go after the Canadian Judicial Council.
Yes.
And make them have teeth in what they do, because as it is, they don't seem to have much power in terms of investigating complaints.
That's what they said, that basically they make a recommendation to the parliament, and it's the parliament that makes the decision. But even when they dismissed the complaint for the appeal judges, they basically said that we didn't feel that he was biased, and with no explanation.
You communicate with your girls by email, right?
By email and by phone. And we just had a conversation Saturday, and they were in tears. They've made comments like, we feel like we're a prisoner. When we stayed with you, you always told us we could go back anytime we wanted. Mm-hmm. But Daddy doesn't do that. And we want to go back, and he won't even let us see you.
How old are they now?
They're 13. December 1st, they turned 13.
It's a long 5 years until they become adults.
Yeah, and that's too long.
Yeah, that's
too long. And you know, it hurts to hear them crying like that. It is amazing. It's an amazing pain. And then the cravings I get for them, it's like...
Right. Like physical.
It's very hard.
Aboriginal women are not known for going to court to claim their rights, especially when they have children with non-Native men. Michelle Odette of the Quebec Native Women's Association talks about how Audrey Isaac is different from most Aboriginal women.
I always known that the justice system right now, the one in place in Canada or at the provincial level, that it's not our justice system that we used to have, and also that it's hard for us to see justice at the end if we, you know, get involved in any case or any situation. But I never had a real case in front of me, a life when I'm known about my history, that the justice never, most of the time, never helped my people. But one day that woman came to our AGA and we sat down and I was listening, and as a mother of two children, I was like, I couldn't believe that as a human being she had no rights. And she couldn't defend herself because she didn't have the proper tool in place. Plus that the first judge never gave her the chance to have a lawyer to represent her and her daughters. And I was like, that's, for me, it's injustice. And right away I asked her if she was be ready to speak to the other women, because sometimes we get too involved. And maybe I thought that I was too involved, too sensitive, too... I understood her really well, that it would be nice that other women listen her story. And at the end, all the women, we were close to 100 women listening her story in the room, and stand up ovation. We couldn't believe, all of us, that she lost her children, the system denied her rights to have a lawyer and also to have the right to be to keep her daughter, plus all the violence that went that was around all that stuff. So the next day I called the Assembly of First Nation and here the chief in Quebec and our national association in Ottawa, which is NWAC, and I said, we have to stand beside that woman because what happened to her, I'm sure it happened to lots of people, not only Aboriginal people, but on women issues. And they didn't have to go see their board or the whatever. They were listening and read what I was sending to them. And as soon as they've heard everything, all of us got together and said, that's it, we'll support that woman. Not because it's just an initiative from Quebec Native Women, but it's affecting Aboriginal people in general and most Aboriginal women. And I was, for the first time in our history, the chief was with us. As a women movement, it's the first time because of Audrey Isaac. And since that day, we never stopped helping her, supporting her, and hoping that one day she'll see the real justice, what it's meant and what it's supposed to do and what it's supposed to be. When you go there, it's because you know that you were discriminated or you weren't respected in your own rights, so you go see a judge. But she went twice, and those two times she was rejected. And the second time, I think it was the worst. The worst when a judge, for you or for me, that person is representing the law, representing justice, and I hope that person will understand that I'm the mother and I'm a good mother, good person, so I'll make he'll make sure or she'll make sure that I can have a share, you know, and spend time with them. But the judge made some comments about her behavior, how she is, how she thinks, her principle, values, culture, everything. And also he denied that that man, the ex-husband, was charged of six charge of assault. I mean, it's a crime. It's, for us women, it's a crime. And when I noticed that all the other organization, mostly men, the chief's organization in Quebec and Ottawa, supported her case, it was just like, finally, there's no more among yourself fight between men and women. When I say amongst Aboriginal people, they saw beyond that. They went, and it's frustrating. And I hope that she will be a role model for other women who's afraid to put charge against their man or their ex-husband or against a situation. She'll be for us a role model, that woman. Most of us, we had some research done here in Quebec with the Aboriginal women. We are afraid to put charge because when we do that action, we know that it's creating precedent, that we're not going to fight only against that person because they didn't respect who we were, who we are, but we will have the entire community against us or the society against us. And she stood up for her rights. People, maybe she thought at the beginning, well, why did you marry a non-native? First mistake from her own community. Maybe they said stuff like that. I don't know. I never asked. But that happened previous with other Aboriginal women. You ran after that. You know, and then she goes, live there, meet that man, blah, 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 have a family, and then run away because she was abused, verbally abused. And you don't need to have a bruise to claim that you're a victim. Just verbal stuff, it's hard enough to support and to accept. And she's right there, she's a role model to say, violence for me is enough. I won't tolerate that anymore. Doesn't matter the kind of violence, but I have to go. And lots of us, we don't move. We're afraid to move or to leave. So we pretend that everything is fine. the research I was telling you, there's only 9%, it's not a lot, 9% of the Native women who will go in court.
Evidently, Judge Barakat showed an inability to appreciate Mi'kmaq culture and the fact that a mother was teaching her child to be part of a culture that's thousands of years old, and even castigated her for introducing her culture to her children. I think it would be interesting for other women in Canada who have had this experience to bring that out as well, not only the abuse, but the assumption by the judiciary, by members of the judiciary, that to be brought up on a reserve and to be taught one's own culture is a handicap and is part of a way of limiting these children. Any comment?
What the judge, Justice Barakat, said about the Mi'kmaq culture, I think it's affecting all the First Nation, all the Native culture across Canada. His comment is affecting all of us. That's why we have to react.
He also referred to the children as not really being of Indian blood, as it were, calling them blonde and freckled, and so they didn't look Indian, they didn't have to be Indian, and why would they want to be?
Well, it's like, again, assuming that there's a specific model to look, you know, a way to look Indian. You should have dark hair, dark face. Well, we have to remember in our history that there were lots of mixed marriage and cultural exchange, and it could be also genetic. It could be your great-great-grandfather who was Scottish, and then poof! Your two parents really dark, and then your children is really reddish and with freckles. I mean, it's not because they don't look like Pocahontas that the judge should, say stuff like that. It's unacceptable.
The Quebec government has been completely silent on the subject. Do you have any explanation as to why that might be?
They're pretending that they don't have any jurisdiction. And maybe they're right, but I'm sure they could say something. Because if something like that happened between a Québécois and a Canadian, you know, because they think they're only Québécois, no? Some people here, they would react and defend their interests, defend that person. And what happened also with the Cree Nation, they had a judge in favor with the Cree people on forestry and other stuff, and the Quebec government made sure that the judge was removed from that case, had to be removed. And funny to say, the federal government also agreed to remove that judge because it seemed like he was in favor for the Cree people.
Is there anything else you'd like to say on the subject of this case?
I just hope that we'll see one day justice, and that woman will get her daughter back. She needs to see them, and they need to see her.
I really believe that, Natives believe that their loved ones that have passed on become our protectors. You know, and I feel my mom's spirit is there. My sister died 3 months ago. She's helping me. And a nephew died 2 years ago. So it's like I pray to these people, and I believe in God. And I just think if it wasn't for my spirituality, I wouldn't be here today, because it's been rough. It's been really rough, and I've only told you a fraction of it. Maybe one day I'll write a book and the whole story will be there and I won't have to tell it anymore. But I really appreciate people wanting to know my story and wanting to help. It supports me. It gives me strength. And it reinforces what I'm doing. It's not only discrimination against Natives, it's discrimination against women.
All community radio listeners are not only welcome, but totally within their rights to write a letter of complaint against the bias and discrimination against First Nations peoples demonstrated by Judge Frank G. Barakat in the Audrey Isaac case. The Canadian Judicial Council is sensitive to public opinion, so if you want to express your disapproval of this insult to Native cultures in Judge Barakat's courtroom, we'll give you the contact information so you can do that. To be effective, Your complaint must talk about bias and discrimination against Native cultures in Judge Barakat's remarks, because this is where the CJC has influence. So if you really want to help, don't talk about his decision, because the CJC has no jurisdiction over decisions. If you decide to write and you want your comments to make a difference, write about Judge Barakat's discriminatory remarks and his biased attitudes in the Audrey Isaac case. If Judge Barakat is discredited, Audrey Isaac can clear her name with the U.S. court system. Then she'll be able to go to the States and see her daughters for the first time in over 2 years. If the judge is not discredited by the CJC, Audrey Isaac won't see her girls for a much longer time. You can help by writing to the justice in charge of the CJC panel looking into this case. Contact information is coming up, so for listeners who want to complain to the Canadian Judicial Council, please have a pen and paper ready. You can write to Justice Richard J. Scott. Justice Richard J. Scott, S-C-O-T-T. The address is Canadian Judicial Council. Canadian Judicial Council, Suite 450, Suite 450, 112 Kent Street. 112 Kent, K-E-N-T, Street, Ottawa, K1A0W8, K1A0W8. The fax number is 613-998-8889. Fax number is 613-998-8889. And, of course, the name of the judge you are complaining about is Frank G. Barakat, B as in boy, A-R-A-K-E-T-T, B-A-R-A-K-E-T-T. For more information, contact news at ckut.ca, news at ckut.ca, or call 514-398-6787. That's the telephone number at CKUT, 514-398-6787. And the spoken word department is extension 2593, extension 2593.